Hello, and welcome to Chick Flicks. I'm Mackenzie Chapman.
And I'm Bridget Hovell, and today we are talking about The Thing.
And it's 2024.
It's 2024, and the movie is from 1982. And here we are.
We're here. It's present day us.
Present day us, yeah.
But what are you into, Bridget? Ooh, it's been a while. Okay.
It's been a while. I was trying to look back and see kind of like my best of books that I really loved in 2023. And two came to mind that I enjoyed so much, and they're very different. The first is The Sentence by Louise Erdrich. It's set in 2020, and it's the first novel I've read that is set in 2020 and kind of deals with not only COVID, but, you know, like George Floyd's murder and all of the protests that happened that summer. It is about this woman who, God damn it, I forget her name.
That's
it's
okay.
About this woman whose name I forget, even though I loved this book. She, at the very start of the book, not a spoiler, she is arrested for transporting a dead body. She's doing it for love, and drugs are discovered on the dead body. So then she goes to prison for a long while. And when she gets out, she begins working at a bookstore, and she also gets married to the cop that initially arrested her, even though he's no longer a cop. And the novel kind of takes place over the course of 2020, like I said, when this main character, whose name is escaping me, even though I truly enjoyed this book, she realizes that the bookstore that she works at is being haunted by a ghost. And she suspects it's the ghost of this white woman. Okay, back up. It's like I've never spoken to a human being before.
No, it's okay. We're getting back into it.
The main character and most of the supporting characters are all part of the Turtle Mountain Band of Chippewa Indians, like Louise Erdrich, and are Native American. This bookstore that the main character works at, she suspects is haunted by the ghost of this white woman that used to come into the bookstore all the time and kind of insinuate slash say that she had Native American heritage and was also Native American.
Okay.
She dies and she starts to haunt the bookstore. So it's like a ghost story. And it sounds pretty twee because it's like it's a bookstore and it's being haunted. But I think what I really enjoyed about it was I just really love books where it's kind of like slice of life and a very slow moving plot that you don't even really notice because you're just enjoying. It's like a hangout book. Like you just want to keep hanging out with those characters, which I really did. And because it's kind of so slow moving and a little like meandering, the emotional beats that the book takes really kind of get you by surprise and how affecting they are. One kind of source of tension throughout the book is that the main character, whose name is Tookie, I just looked it up.
Okay.
Tookie and her husband, who, like I mentioned, was the one who arrested her initially, have kind of never addressed the fact that he is responsible for her being in prison for so long.
Oh, my God.
And so that eventually kind of like that kind of like insecurity she feels and like kind of like reproachfulness she also feels towards him like bubbles up eventually, but it's really beautiful and really well done. And I also thought it was just interesting to read about events that happened so, you know, so recently, right. Kind of put in context of this little ghost story. Really, really enjoyed it. The other book that I loved that I read last year is called Our Share of the Night by Maria Enriquez. It is set, the backdrop is Argentina's dirty war that kind of spanned, you know, different parts of the 21st century. And it follows, it's kind of like an intergenerational story. It's definitely like an epic, and it's also like a very, very scary horror novel. It follows, this young man. It's like I'm forgetting all of these character names because it's been there's the first thing to go.
Yeah,
you know,
I
agree. Names of the characters.
I know. doesn't matter.
It follows this young man, this dad, who he is wrapped up in this cult. It's actually a cult run by his wife's family, and they are searching for eternal life, basically. And to achieve eternal life, they need a medium who will basically contact the devil and like the spirit world. And they believe that through these contacts with the spirit world, they will eventually achieve eternal life. The main character of the first part of the book is the young man who is a medium, and is his son, his young infant son, who he suspects is also a medium. And then the novel jumps ahead a generation where you're following the son. And it reminded me a little bit of Stephen King's It, in that it's about the middle section is about like this group of kids discovering like a cosmic horror that changes them forever. Even though it is, again, kind of like a hangout novel where you're just like hanging out with these group of kids as they, you know, like live in the suburbs of, you know, and like enjoy being 12 and 13 year olds and have crushes on each other. And meanwhile, the backdrop is like this awful, terrible, horrific thing is about to occur. It was just really, really good. It was so gripping and it was so fucking scary. Like there's parts of it that I can still just like viscerally remember because it's very like not only graphic, but just like chilling to the core.
Wow.
And it really also connects really well with the true like historical moment of where the book is set, of Argentina's dirty war, in which like large numbers of people were being like killed and by the government, you know, thrown from helicopters over the ocean, like horrible stuff. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of how like where the cult takes place in wow. that violent era. Loved it. Really, really good. Hope My they gosh. Make it into an like a series, because it was just such an epic good book. Okay. And then the last thing that I'm into is this movie. It came out in 2007. Maybe people have heard of it. It's called Michael Clayton. And I watched it a couple weekends ago because I just knew mm-hmm. that I was going to love Michael Clayton. And I did, because I love an adult drama, you know? And it felt like a real like a blind spot for me, like, or not a blind spot. I don't mean to say that, but like it felt like just an area, like a movie that I needed to see.
Yeah.
It stars George Clooney and Tilda Swinton and the late great Tom Wilkinson. And it's about a lawyer who basically discovers a cover up, but it's so good.
It is so good.
I watched the last 10 minutes as soon as the movie ended. I went back and I watched them. And then since then, I've watched them on my phone on YouTube at least four times. it just really got me. And I feel like it'll, upon repeat viewings, make me like it even more. George Clooney is so charismatic.
Yeah.
He's just like the most, you're just like, I saw this Letterboxd review that was like, we need to get George Clooney in front of the camera again. Like, stop. He's doing these little movies where he directs, but
yeah,
no one wants that.
He was in that movie with, Julia Roberts last year. The
rom-com.
Yeah, the rom-com.
I mean, I should probably watch that. I just should encourage him in every way that I can, you know?
Yeah.
Continue making great American adult dramas.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I just love it. Like a...
Yeah. I mean...
So good.
Maybe we should do a series of legal thrillers. Love a legal thriller.
We could do Manchurian Candidate. We could do The Pelican Brief.
Yeah.
There's a lot out there.
There's a lot.
Yeah. There's a lot. Mackenzie, what have you been into?
So most recently, as of like 30 minutes ago, I was watching a YouTube channel by a man named Xander Budnick. And I love this YouTube channel. It's about a man named Xander who goes into the wilderness backpacking, canoeing and stuff. And he puts out videos maybe every 2 weeks or something. And they're always a delight. He is just such first of all, he's like a model. He's super hot.
Oh yeah. I remember you telling me.
And I can see you Googling, highlighting his name.
I'm highlighting, yeah.
And he is also just like a big, he's like a himbo kind of. He's like a big goofball.
That's very attractive.
He's super nice. Like, I can't imagine him saying anything mean to anyone ever. And he just like, he has a really good eye for like cinematography, I would say. And he has a good sense of humor. Like, he's just like a joy to watch camp. And like,
he looks like this one actor who I really like. I can't remember his name, but he has that same kind of like blonde mm-hmm. guy look.
Yeah. He's so hot. Oh, anyway, I love that YouTube channel and would recommend it if you're into like outdoorsy stuff. I think if you're not into that, you probably won't like it. There's not enough there if you don't like that.
He's not that hot.
But I do like to like go on a hike. I've been known to camp, you know, so I love it. And sometimes he'll like go with his family. Sometimes he'll go with some friends.
Yeah.
Sometimes the videos are short. Sometimes they're long. You know, there's a good variety. And he's Canadian, so he says a that lot.
Just adds to the charm.
It's just very cute and charming. Yeah. And it's always a delight when there's a new video and we could put that on really quick while we like eat dinner or whatever.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. The second thing is the movie The Boogeyman, which I watched this past weekend. It is a Stephen King adaptation that came out last summer. And I think it had a lot of hype around it. I remember watching the trailer and everyone was saying it was like the scariest thing that scariest Stephen. I think Stephen King might have said it was the scariest adaptation or something. So I was super excited for it. But then it came out. And no one talked about it. I forgot it came out.
I feel like it probably went straight to streaming, right?
It must have, because I don't think it was. I mean, who knows? I've been like MIA in the movie world, so
no,
I don't
no
know.
No one can confirm. No one talked about it. Okay. I also remember the trailer dropping and people getting excited.
Yeah, I think we probably shared it with each other on Twitter or something.
Yeah,
but I didn't, and then I noticed it on streaming recently and I was like, oh yeah, I forgot about that, I should watch this. And so I did watch it and I really liked it. It stars Sophie Thatcher from Yellow Jackets as Sadie, a teen girl whose mom gets killed in an accident, and Sadie's dad is Chris Messina. He's a therapist, and her younger sister is named Sawyer and she is afraid of the dark. And then one day, like, a very distressed looking man wanders into the dad's home office and tells him about his three children who were all killed, and that his one daughter had seen like this monster. And then the man hangs himself in a closet in the family home and is discovered by Sadie. And then the boogeyman begins to appear to Sawyer and eventually Sadie. So that's like the premise rundown. But I thought this movie was really scary. I feel like it did a really good job of what like the boogeyman is, right? Which is like making you scared of the things that you don't like see, and you're filling it in with your imagination. I think it was a little too on the nose with a lot of its like messaging around that idea, and also like its themes with grief. Like it spelled out some of those themes, like literally just saying them, which I'm like, oh, come on, like just let us like think about it and figure it out.
Right. Like, we don't need to be spoon fed.
Yeah. But overall, I thought it was really enjoyable and really scary. It does the thing where the monster is just like two beady eyes in the dark. And I like that. I think that is always very scary and effective.
Very effective.
Yeah. And Sophie Thatcher is so good. She's like my favorite performance in Yellow Jackets.
I think she's mine too. She is pretty good.
Yeah, she does such a good job of mimicking, what the frick is her name? The girl I hate.
Juliette Lewis. She really does.
Yeah, I don't like Juliette Lewis.
And
but
they don't
I
look anything alike. And
she, not at all.
Not even a little bit. But you're like, all right, I see it.
Yeah, because she's so good at like her like voice and like mannerisms. So.
Yeah, really good.
Solid horror movie, though, I would say. It did remind me of, like, The Babadook a little bit in terms of, like, grief and, like you were saying, like, trauma. But I liked it. And I thought it was better than, like, Talk to Me. So
Oh, shots fired against Talk to Me. Yeah, I thought Talk to Me was a little overhyped.
The what? I guess I did see a movie this year. Talk to Me.
It's the you one did. Movie. Yeah, I when I finally got on Letterboxd, I was like, Mackenzie has seen Talk to Me.
And the final thing I'm into, which is to no surprise to all the fans of the pod and anyone who knows me IRL, I'm into the third Crescent City book by Sarah J. Maas. It just came out last week. It's called House of Flame and Shadow.
Yeah.
And I just started it last night because I was rereading the one that came before it. So
is it hitting?
What?
Is it hitting? Are you loving it?
It's hitting. I mean, listen, I love a fantasy book. It is the only way my brain can stop thinking about work and stress. And I am not like a Sarah J. Maas stan. Like, I know nothing about who she is. Or, like, I have no interest in knowing what, like, anything about her. Unless she's, like, evil. And then, of course, I would.
Then, yeah.
But she seems like a dork, kind of. But, I, like, really enjoy her world building and a lot of her characters. I definitely have, like, some issues with a lot of her bad choices. She does not always make good choices. But all that to say,
that's what keeps it interesting.
Yeah.
You know?
You gotta have something to critique, you know?
Right.
But this world, the Crescent City books, is like a modern magical world. So there's like a city. They're in a city.
They have like modern plumbing.
Yes, they have plumbing and cell phones and clubs and drugs and all that fun stuff. There's a little bit of a multiverse thing going on. I don't think at this point that's a spoiler, but
I had heard that. I heard that on the streets.
So it's very exciting to finally be like in that, because that was the big reveal at the end of the last book. So now I'm like experiencing it really. And that's a lot of fun because it's like bringing back some old characters that I really love. And This series out of the other, all of them, is like my least favorite, I would say, but I'm excited to see where it goes. And yeah, that's it.
That's exciting. That's good stuff. I read a profile, not a profile, but like Vulture did a thing on her.
Oh yeah.
Kind of recently. Yeah.
What is she like?
She apparently doesn't do any press. So it was mostly not like actually about her, but more about like an overview of the series, the different series and stuff. She's like very like press shy.
Okay. Oh, maybe that makes sense that I don't know anything about her then.
Right. I think probably, yeah, for that reason. Yeah. A little mysterious. Cool. Yeah. Let's jump into the friggin' thing. Let's do this thing. Okay. Mackenzie, what is the thing about?
It's about two Norwegian scientists.
The power of friendship.
Yeah. So we did The Thing from 1982 is what you said?
Yes. That's so funny. It sounds like when, like, you know, people are like, I did a thing.
Yeah. It does sound like
so we did a thing.
You know, Ian made a good point earlier when I was talking about this with him that this movie had to be good because it's called The Thing. Like, that's a big title. You like
it's a huge title.
Yeah, it's like it's Alien. You have to have like a good
definitive.
Yeah,
yeah.
Because then everyone else that could have had a better one.
Yeah,
is shit out of luck.
If
they
had done a sequel, it could have been done like Some Things or.
Oh yeah, that's good.
Things is funny. Okay.
All right. Here's the setup.
Yeah.
Two Norwegian scientists chase a sled dog through remote Antarctica, shooting wildly at it from their helicopter and eventually driving it into an American research station. In their crazed pursuit of the dog, both Norwegian men are killed. The dog assimilates quickly into the American Research Center, while Pilot McCready and Dr. Copper visit the Norwegians' base to determine what happened. They find distorted, inhumane remains, and later, an apparent alien spacecraft lodged deep in the Arctic landscape. McCready and the scientists soon realize that their base has been infiltrated by an alien force, the Thing, that can violently assume the shape of any living being it comes in contact with.
Ooh.
So was this your first time seeing the Thing?
It is not. I couldn't remember my first time seeing it. Probably sometime in high school, I feel like, in a basement.
That tracks.
With my older sister's friends. I did most recently watch it in winter of 2021 during the Texas winter storm that hit, where we all lost power and stuff. Yeah. Before we all lost power and had a terrible 48 hours of coldness, Tim and I were like, it's snowing in Texas. We should watch The Thing. Like, this is a perfect snow day movie. What about you? Have you seen it before?
I've seen it before within the last 10 years, probably with Ian, because it's one of his favorite movies, but I don't remember it. I didn't really remember much of it.
I felt the same way.
Yeah. So I knew I liked it. But I didn't remember much of it. So it was kind of going in fresh.
I felt the same way. I think what stands out when, like, my recollection is remembering, like, kind of the bigger set pieces about special effects. And I think, like, not to spoil my overview, like, overall feeling about the movie, it's that the special effects are, like, by far the best thing about it, and everything else is, like, a little forgettable.
I think, yeah, I kind of agree. It's sort of like, it's like the impression of the movie is what sticks instead of, like, the actual details. Like, it's like the vibe.
It is the vibe, because it's all vibes. Like, anytime you see a movie, like, set in Antarctica or in, like, a kind of like cold, desolate area, you're like, oh, The Thing vibes. Kind of like we were talking earlier about True Detective. Night Country, I think, is referencing The Thing a lot.
Totally.
It's so funny to use it in conversation. And it's like really made an impression in that way. It's like very singular. It's a remake of a movie in 1951 called, I think, called also The Thing, but based on a novella from 1938 called Who Goes There. And I think the plot is different enough in this movie from those other movies. And I looked up a picture of the monster from the 1951 film adaptation, and it's like a humanoid that's like a plant person.
Interesting.
Like a planty guy. So they really took it in a different direction here. Yeah.
Because, like, plants can't, that's so interesting, because they chose a place where plants can't survive at all.
Right.
But I was thinking that, even though, like, I feel like icicles and just, like, snow, like, that type of thing does have, like, an organic feel to it, kind of.
Right. Like, the Thing's spacecraft was buried underneath the cold, the ice, much like Captain America.
Oh, yeah.
He was out there with The Thing. But as for more background, this was directed by John Carpenter, horror maestro. Did this just a few years after Halloween, but with, like, 10 times the budget. Like, they just upgraded him and were like, here's a ton of money. He worked with cinematographer Dean Cundey, who also did Halloween, who I feel like in Halloween, like, especially, you can just tell that guy's, like, super duper talented.
Oh yeah.
And the music, the score, is very specific, and it's by Ennio Morricone, who is, like, a famous spaghetti western composer. You know, a lot of those riffs you're familiar with. And I was reading that he made a ton of music for this film. Not all of it was used, and the leftovers were used for Quentin Tarantino's Hateful Eight movie.
I hate that. Like, yeah. Like, did he know about that?
I think John Carpenter knew. He mentioned it, like, it was mentioned to him in a interview I was reading. But that's also a movie where it's, like, kind of a closed set of characters in the cold. So I think he really wanted that association. I haven't seen it, but I just know that they're, like, stuck in a cabin together.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting. And John Carpenter himself is, like, a great composer. Obviously, he did the iconic Halloween score.
Yeah.
And he, you know, worked really closely with Ennio, even though he doesn't speak any English. He's Italian. And he told him, apparently, he just wanted less. He's like, he just wanted, like, very sparse synthesizers.
Yeah.
And then he kind of would do patchwork on the score, like, because he's, you know, a composer as well. So he'd be like, oh, I actually need a little, like, doodly do thing here.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
He just, like, did it really quickly.
Yeah. It is, like, it does have a similar vibe to the Halloween mm-hmm. you know, score, in that it's just like, it is pretty simple, like, right. but it's so effective.
Yeah, very effective, very, very moody. Mm-hmm. This movie came out the same day as Blade Runner in theaters.
Interesting.
Also a very misunderstood movie from 1980s.
Yeah, both also like vaporwave.
Yes, and I think the same week as E.T., which is weird to put them all in like the same wow. plane of time.
Yeah,
in some crazy. Ways.
Wow, what right. a fucking weekend.
Right, right.
Imagine. Had,
yeah, nuts. The Blade Thinger or something as your Oppenheimer. This movie stars Kurt Russell as MacReady, who is kind of like the Ripley, mm-hmm. we'll say, of this cast.
Mm-hmm.
A really embarrassing thing I did think when he showed up on screen with that giant hat, you know, the one I'm talking
oh,
about.
Oh, yeah. I know.
And the
hat.
Sunglasses. I was like, this guy, he has riz, as the kids say.
Yeah.
He,
oh,
he
totally.
He's pulling this look off.
Oh, my. I looked up how old he was, and he's 30. I think how he's old? Like 31. And I was like, I get it.
Oh, like, yeah. I mean, he looks so cool in this movie. And I also thought, because again, like we were saying, I had my brain wiped of the plot of right. this movie. I was like, is he supposed to be a scientist? And then pretty quickly, they're like, he's the pilot. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, yeah, because he's too hot to yeah. be a scientist. and the MacReady character is, he's also, I think it's briefly mentioned that he was a pilot in the Vietnam War. That's something else about this movie, too. I was kind of trying to, not that every movie, like we were talking about, has to have like a baked in obvious subtext, but I feel like this movie, if it did, I didn't get it. You know, like I was like, is there something there at the Vietnam War other than like men being pushed to the limits and distrust in each other and kind of like impending annihilation? I don't really know.
I don't know either.
I just, if it,
yeah. it was more, I feel like it was just more about the vibes, like, and yeah. and if those vibes triggered an emotional response within the viewer, less so about.
Right. Like, you know how like in not to, I'm like, I feel like the easy comparison to make here is Alien, because it's such a similar setup yeah. to Alien.
Yeah.
But
of
course. I feel like Alien does such a good job of kind of characterizing the cast without like going into detail. You're like, he's this guy, and like Rip, like you just like know a lot about them, kind of like being shown and not told.
Sure.
And then you get really invested in Ripley.
Yep.
Like kind of in like the midway point of the film, you're like, okay, like she's my ride or die right yep, now. Yep, like yep. we're gonna get out of this movie. And I don't know if the cast in this movie felt the same way to me. Yeah.
I feel like with this cast, I felt mm-hmm. kind of the opposite. Well, sort mm-hmm. of. I felt like this mm-hmm. cast, I was impressed with how well they were all separately characterized despite being such a large cast.
Mm-hmm.
Some more than others for sure. But I do think that there wasn't like, obviously MacReady was like the guy, but I didn't right. obviously feel as much for him as I do for Ripley. And perhaps mm-hmm. that's because I've spent more time with Ripley overall, like
right. yeah, yeah, yeah.
in my life more and hours just with, her. With the two like movies that I have seen of her. I've only seen the first two Alien movies.
That's all
but,
you need to see.
It did rely on like the very easy like categorizing of all the different men, like you said, like MacReady's the mm-hmm. pilot. There's like
right.
the
nervous guy,
the cook guy,
yeah.
the dog guy,
the dog guy, the guy who's like tweak, you know, like freaking out.
Yeah, yeah, the guy, yeah, the like fidgety guy, the, you know, the doctor, whatever. I was speaking of the doctor, it was so like shocking to me to see a man that age with a nose ring.
Oh,
he has a nose ring, like a hoop.
What?
Isn't that? I was, and it's like a big hoop too. Like
my
it's
God.
Not dainty. It's like a big hoop. I was
I
like,
didn't
wow.
even notice.
I was like, I mean, I'm maybe it's embarrassing to be. I'm like embarrassed a little bit to be shocked by that. But I was like, whoa! I don't think I've ever seen
Cooper,
a
Copper,
person
Dr.
that
Copper?
Old with.
Yeah,
certainly not a man. Anyway, whoa. I do think that I felt like I could distinguish all the characters enough where I felt like, mm-hmm, oh, they mm-hmm. had a personality. I didn't really need to sure. know their backstory because I knew.
Yeah.
I felt like I knew them based on their behavior and then also like
the setup,
setup of them, whatever. I do think though that some of the choices the characters made were like confusing and didn't really make sense for the characters.
Yep.
But and I also think that overall, like they like with the whole movie, they left an impression rather than anything like specific, I guess. But I did think it was like it is a lot of people, so I was like impressed with. You know,
yeah.
I wasn't like, oh, that's the curly haired man.
Yeah.
You know, like I was like, no, that's the man who does this or whatever, you know?
Right.
Okay. I think. Wait.
Well, I cannot believe this guy has a nose ring and I didn't notice.
It's big, right?
It's so big.
Yeah.
Wow.
Isn't that funny?
That is a very interesting characterization.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the other kind of like standout character is Keith David as Childs. They all go by their last names.
Yeah.
And he is kind of introduced or kind of becomes a more prominent character as they get whittled down. And we'll get to the ending, but he is one of the only two survivors along with MacReady.
Mm-hmm.
Survivors, maybe. Like, who knows? And then I think the other cast member I wanted to draw attention to is Jed the Wolf Dog. Playing an unnamed dog character in this film.
Yes.
he's the dog that shows up. He's being chased by the Norwegians. He's actually the thing. And many people have commented on this, but Jed the Wolf Dog is quite unsettling in this role.
Oh, yeah.
He there's like one scene of him walking down a hallway, stopping at different doors and like listening and then continuing to walk. And he just really pulls it off.
Yeah, he does. I was I kept trying to find like that specific scene again,
right?
Because it's so like I mean, you could think about whatever you want about like dogs and their intelligence or whatever, but you're like, this is a dog that knows something more than a dog should know.
I'm always impressed when dogs don't look directly at the camera too, because I feel like as a dog owner, when I want Twiggy to look at the camera to take a picture, she's always like, looks everywhere but the camera. Yeah, yeah. And I just can't believe that works. Jed the wolf dog, part, you know, husky, part wolf. He also lived to be 17 years old and he was in White Fang. He has a really long list of roles.
That's cool.
He also reminded me of, no spoilers for Anatomy of a Fall, which I think you should see because it was really, really good.
I'll watch it.
There's an amazing dog performance in that movie. And he's also like a husky breed. So I'm like, maybe they're just natural actors.
That's so interesting. I wonder.
Yeah. Very similar types of dogs. I mean, they're not that similar. Please, dog heads, don't get in my mentions. But they're not a chihuahua. They're like big,
right,
fluffy dogs.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Arctic dogs.
Arctic dogs, exactly. Let's talk about special effects.
Yeah, let's do it.
They had a budget, an overall budget of $10 million with $200,000 for creature effects, which honestly seems quite small compared to what they pulled off.
Yeah, that's nuts.
Yeah, but at the time, it was more than a studio had ever allocated to a monster film.
Whoa.
Yeah, so they really gave them a lot of money to run with.
And they put it to good use.
They did put it to good use. And here's a fun tie-in with our two episodes ago. the head of the special effects for this movie was basically a child. He was in his early 20s. Some sources say 23. Some say 21. Maybe when they started filming, he was 21.
Mm-hmm.
His name's Rob Bowden. And he was the assistant to Rick Baker on American Werewolf in London.
Wow.
Yeah, which you can kind of see the like special effects philosophy.
Yeah.
And these two movies are very similar. It's very like they do a lot of reverse shots to kind of simulate like organic growth.
Yep.
I'm doing a lot of movements with my arms that no one can see. and like very detailed models and kind of like puppetry as well.
Yeah. I love a practical effect, guys.
Yes.
You'll know by now, especially after this series that we've been doing.
Yeah.
I just love them. And I love when they're like really gross.
Yeah.
And this movie has a lot of it. It's like quite a spectacle. And I also love body horror, and I think that this does both. And I do think in particular that the dog special effects were really great. I think I mean, obviously, I mean, everything was great, but the dog in particular, I thought was like kind of unique, and it had me thinking that there should be more animal related body horror, which I know people are probably like super against, but fur freaks me the fuck out. So I think more fur in body horror would be interesting for me.
I think like a lot of animal body horror is related to like werewolves too.
Yeah.
Totally. You know, but in some like, ooh, you know what? Ugh, I don't think it's practical effects, but I always think about the transformation in District 9 as like one of the grossest things I've ever seen on film.
Yeah.
Like it's nauseating.
Yeah. Like really. My mom walked out of that movie.
Oh, I want it too. Yeah. I feel like we watched it for a film class, didn't we?
Yeah. Yeah, we did.
We did.
Because my boyfriend at the time said it wasn't about apartheid. And I was like, I was like, yes, it is.
Wait, and do you also remember our friend Aubrey didn't realize there were supposed to be subtitles? And like then the aliens talk, there's supposed to be subtitles. And so she watched it with no subtitles and was just like, I didn't get a lot of this.
Wait, Ian and I did that for Planet of the Apes.
Oh, which one?
I don't remember. Like the second of the new ones or the third or...
Are they talking in like chimpanzee?
Yeah.
Oh,
and it was like 20 minutes in when we were like,
you're like, they're making a choice.
Yeah, we were like, this is just how it is.
I feel like I did that recently, too, with a movie that had just like multiple human languages in them. And I then was like annoyed. Sometimes I feel like I get annoyed sometimes when there will be like incidental, incidentally another language spoken in a film and they don't offer subtitles, where I'm like, oh, you like, you don't want me to know. Oh, I guess this is a good example of the Norwegians at the beginning of this movie. You shouldn't know what they're saying,
right?
Because I looked it up. What they're saying is, that's not a dog, kill it, that's some sort of thing.
Yeah. Oh
yeah, so that's what they were screaming the whole time. But you're not supposed to know that,
right? Yeah.
Would be a spoiler if you were a Norwegian person watching this movie.
Yep.
So the guy who did the dog monster was named Sam Winston. He helped Rob Bowden. And that was like a giant puppet, which is pretty cool to think about, too.
Yeah.
And they like had like multiple crew members operating the puppet. Something I thought was interesting was that Carpenter and Bowden wanted to avoid the movie getting slapped with like a really restrictive rating because of how gross some of the transformations would be. So they said that they tried to make the transformations as like fantastical as possible, with like brightly colored and oddly colored like viscera and guts.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think it looks like guts. Realistically gross.
Yeah,
like guts to me. So I don't know if they succeeded in that.
It's funny, like maybe there's like a very specific criteria that they were trying to avoid, because like it definitely... Part of it, like, definitely doesn't look human, right? Like, it's, like, gray or, like, purple or whatever. But you're still, your mind still codes it as, like, guts and, like, disgusting.
Like, tendons and stuff.
The, like, worm tendrils that they had, I thought were so cool. And it reminded me of the boar god in Princess Mononoke.
Oh, yeah. Which I could totally see that,
More animal body horror.
Very stringy. Very stringy. I think my favorite practical effect that they do in this is the sequence with the guy whose head pops off.
Oh, yeah.
Head kind
that's
of sprays, great. Which is also like a puppet that's on some of the legs are animatronic. It looks so good. And they also had to create like a whole chest cavity for that sequence where like the mouth appears, and the guy, the doctor, I guess, who has his arms bitten off, they used someone who had arm amputations.
Okay. Yeah.
And they put a mask on his face of the actor, and they were like, we don't even care that it looks like a guy with a mask on, because hopefully if we're doing our jobs correctly, you won't be paying attention to that. You'll just be like freaked out.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't notice.
Yeah. I've never noticed.
Yeah.
Cause you're like, holy crab bully, that guy's arms just got bitten off.
Yeah.
He's done for. The other thing that Carpenter said is that he wanted to avoid a guy in a suit effect for the monster here, which he thought was noticeable in Alien, which I was like, ooh, a little shade to Alien.
Kind of true. You do notice it, like,
he's scary in Aliens.
Yeah, yeah.
Not a guy I'd want to know.
Yeah, no, not at all. Still very scary.
Still very scary. Yeah. So the ending of this movie also has been picked apart online a bajillion times.
Yeah.
Yeah. What happens?
Are you asking?
I'm asking.
Well,
what do you think happens? Yeah.
I guess so. MacReady destroys the outpost mm-hmm. with like bombs and dynamite and whatever. And mm-hmm. He's like wandering in the ruins, I guess, the smoldering ruins of the outpost. And Childs, who had like kind of disappeared, he like wandered off into the snow, mm-hmm. finds him, and they sit down together and kind of have a drink together. Mm-hmm. And they're both sort of like, you could be the thing, but let's take a break.
Right.
And then the movie yeah. ends.
Yes. I will say it is frustrating. I think Roger Ebert maybe talks about this in his review. It is frustrating how many times they're like, nobody split up. And then they're like, we'll go over here. You go over there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, oh, darn.
Yeah.
We're all a thing now.
Yeah.
It's like that. Come on. Yeah. So it ends with like the two men having a standoff, basically, but sharing a little alcohol, knowing that they may freeze. They will probably freeze to death.
Yeah.
And a lot of online sleuths have tried to pick apart who is the thing in that shot. If someone's the thing, a lot of people say it's Childs, because there's this theory that if you, I can't remember if it's, if you are or aren't the thing, you have a gleam in your eyes.
Oh yeah.
But
there's also like John something about yeah. the earring. Like if a human is wearing an earring, the thing won't like also be wearing an earring. It might have like the ear pierced, but it won't have like the thing.
Interesting. Here's a question. Do you think if you're the thing, you know you're the thing?
Yes. I think that because of the one shot at the end where the like scientist that goes crazy is behind the Nall or whatever, who is the cook, mm-hmm. and when they're setting up the dynamite.
I
think his mind is gone. I think once you're the thing, your mind is gone. So you know you're the thing because you're the only
like, I got all these thoughts about being the thing.
Yeah.
I agree. I think that you're the thing. I also think that the thing, if one-on-one with a human, is just going to go for it. I think like yeah. in the larger group settings, they were trying to be sneaky. So I'm inclined to think at the end of the movie, Childs and MacReady are both human. And I think that way it makes it kind of more of a tragic ending, is yeah. that they're like humans, but they can't trust each other.
Yeah.
So they're going to die.
I agree.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I did. Were you going to say what is Carpenter's take on? He changes like, his know. Mind, doesn't he?
Yeah, I think I feel like he does change his mind.
And which I love. Like, I think it's so
snarky
funny.
Things where he's like, I know if someone's the thing, yeah. but I'm not telling you.
I think that's so funny. Like, yeah. I don't know.
He's keeping room open for a sequel.
Exactly. Yeah, I don't know. It's just like, he's just messing with people. I think it's good.
Funny that it was released same day as Blade Runner, because people also think that Harrison Ford is a replicant in Blade Runner because his eyes have a gleam in them at the end of the movie.
What?
So maybe that's the theme, is that in the 80s, you know, Cold War, people were worried about doubles and people sneaking unnoticed amongst society.
Yep. That's a good.
Here we go.
I mean, it was cold.
Yeah, and it was cold in this movie.
Yeah.
And they easily could have been Russian scientists, but they made them Norwegian scientists. I wonder if just to take that off the plate as like a area of concern.
Yeah, maybe.
I liked all those like photos. They were like, the Norwegians found the spacecraft, and then they took like a million photos of them being like, woohoo!
Yeah.
Like, we did it.
Yeah. Do you think that there was like another theory that I was reading that was like, was the thing trying to conquer the world, or was it trying to get back home? Like, what? Because the scientist man was like building.
Yeah, he was trying to build a spaceship.
But was that maybe to get to more populated areas?
Oh, I think maybe to get to more populated areas.
And because was the original thing that crashed also a victim of the thing?
Of bullying.
Because it crashed. Not a bullying.
No, I see what you're saying. Like, it was absorbed, by the thing. Like,
yeah.
Maybe it's like an alien type thing where, like, the mouth thingy shoots in, takes over.
Yeah. Like, maybe like, another alien species was involved and taken over by the thing. Like, what is the thing?
I like that theory a lot. Like, yeah, we don't know. We don't know what the thing is.
Yeah, we don't know.
That's interesting. I guess the thing is supposed to be trying to get off to infect more people, because MacReady says that a lot too, that he's like sabotaging the base or whatever for that reason.
Yeah.
MacReady, cool guy. I think to wrap up, this movie was widely panned when it came out, which is pretty funny because I think now the general view is like it's a classic.
Right. Yeah.
It made like these incredible effects. The New York Times said it was foolish, depressing, overproduced movie, virtually storyless, with actors used as merely props to be hacked, slashed, disemboweled, and decapitated. And Roger Ebert also really didn't like it and said that there was typecasting and a few reliable stereotypes in this cast, the drunk, the psycho, the hero. And the few scenes that develop characterizations are overwhelmed by the scenes in which the men are just setups for an attack by the thing. And I don't disagree with him.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I do, because I think that they are characterized enough. Mm-hmm. But I get, like as a whole, the movie, I think, is about, like I said a million times by now, the vibe.
The vibe. The thing is the vibe.
Yeah. And it's a good vibe, though. It's an interesting vibe. You're like, a split diopter like three times. I like that.
Yeah. That's true.
Like, that's like candy, you know?
It's a vibe heavy movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like those count as our one star reviews, actually.
You don't want to read
The New York Times, Vincent Canby, and Roger Ebert saying, yeah, basically panning it pretty hard.
Yeah.
What is your overall thoughts, Mackenzie?
I really like this movie. I feel like I had less fun than I did with like American Werewolf in London, perhaps, because I thought the plot in American Werewolf in London was surprisingly tight, I guess, listening to my review from a year ago.
Yeah, I mean, it's a quick little movie.
But you know, the vibes in this one, immaculate. So I'm gonna go with like a 6.
Yeah. I agree. I felt uncomfortable watching it. I was, you know, like, it was not a pleasant experience, obviously. But it's not one that I like want to kind of like repeat very often. Like an Alien or like a Halloween. Like, I think Halloween is the better Carpenter movie.
Sure.
No. By a lot. I think, though, like we said, the special effects are just, it really makes it just like worthwhile and worth watching. I feel like these practical effects, too, are almost like a little bit all what movies are about. And like the movie, that's like true movie magic.
Yeah.
It's like saying we're going to make a real thing in this real space for this like fantasy we're all participating in that we can interact with. And that's just so cool.
It's like,
whoa, this car's headlights are somehow like, it's so far away. And yet it feels like they're in my eyes.
Oh, God.
It's okay. But yeah, like it's just, that's what it's all about, really, is the fantasy becoming real.
Yeah.
In the movie.
Art. Cinema.
So in some ways, the thing is all around us and within. So I'm going to give it a 6 as well.
Okay. Solid.
Not my favorite Carpenter. Not my favorite horror sci-fi movie.
But Andy, like, take a screenshot from like anywhere in that movie.
That's the vibe, you know?
Yeah.
You're like, that's me. I'm Kurt Russell with sunglasses on. I wish.
Yeah. Oh, if beard. Only.
It's so good. It's a great beard. On that note,
Chick Flicks is researched and written by Bridget Hovell and edited by Mackenzie Chapman. Many thanks to Tim Grieve Carlson for our music.
Stay tuned for our next episode. It's a mystery. Sorry.
No, it's okay. I was like, oh, I was supposed to say that. Yeah. It's a mystery. Maybe we'll do a legal thriller. Maybe we'll do more practical effects. Who knows?
Let us know. Sound off. You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Chick Flicks Pod. I'm not on Twitter that much. X, but we'll be there. We'll be there posting. Ooh, and we're both on Letterboxd.
Follow us on Letterboxd.
Follow us on Letterboxd. I'm not really sure what my name is. Oh, it's Brovel. What's yours, Mackenzie?
It's just Ken's Chap.
Ken's Chap. Easy peasy.
Yeah.
And thank you for listening. See you out there.
See ya.